Muy buenas tardes, bienvenidos a la Comisión Interamericana de Derechos Humanos. ¿Ustedes hablan inglés solamente? Sure. No, it's the language, so I can conduct the hearing in English as well.
Yeah, someone will come.
No problem. Bueno, por ahora se puso en el...
Uno, dos, tres, probando, probando.
Oye, me gusta que empieces. El cambio sería entonces simplemente que tú te fueras a la otra sala mientras dura eso. Otro cambio ya no, porque sería muy complicado. Para la...
No, cuando termine aquí,
te pasa a la...
Uno, dos, tres, probando, uno, dos, tres.
Bueno, bienvenidos, bienvenidas a la Comisión Interamericana de Derechos Humanos. Vamos a realizar la audiencia sobre derechos humanos de niños huérfanos y política de adopción internacional en las Américas, con especial énfasis en Guatemala, Honduras y Perú. La audiencia ha sido solicitada por el Harvard Law School Child Advocate Program and the Center for Adoption Policy. El objetivo de la audiencia, según se señalara en la solicitud, es presentar testimonios y datos sobre los problemas que presuntamente han acarreado las políticas restrictivas de adopción impulsadas por organismos internacionales en Guatemala, Honduras y Perú. Los solicitantes presentarán ideas sobre el tipo de reformas positivas de regulación en los procesos de adopción internacional, atendiendo a las denuncias sobre abuso, adopción sin consentimiento, secuestro y compra de niños, que se venía dando en el pasado. La audiencia está programada para tener una duración de 45 minutos. Como no es una audiencia con Estado, puedo preguntarles a los solicitantes cuánto han planificado hablar para luego tener un intercambio con los comisionados. De micrófono, por favor.
We plan to speak for half an hour total and leave 15 minutes for questions.
All right. So you have the floor for that time now.
Distinguished commissioners, buenas tardes y gracias. Thank you for this opportunity to present regarding the human rights of unparented children in Guatemala, Honduras, and Peru. I am Elizabeth Barthollet. I'm on the faculty at Harvard Law School. I'm here with my colleagues on behalf of Harvard Law School's Child Advocacy Program and the Center for Adoption Policy. I believe that your decision to hear the particular human rights issues that we address is of enormous significance. Many who talk about human rights in this unparented child context focus on very different issues, namely the human rights of parents and the sovereignty rights of states. When they do address the human rights of the child, they focus almost entirely on heritage rights to grow up in the family and country of birth. They ignore what we say are the key human rights at issue. We assert that children's most fundamental human rights are to live and to grow up in a nurturing family so that they can fulfill their human potential. These rights have been largely ignored in the debate surrounding unparented children and related international adoption policies. We argue that unparented children have a right to be placed in families, either their original families, or if that is not feasible, then in the first available permanent nurturing families. This includes the right to be placed in international adoption if that is where families are available. We argue that children have a related right to be liberated from the conditions characterizing orphanages, street life, and most foster care. Paolo Barazzo, on the faculty at Boston College Law School, will present on the governing human rights law principles that make the child's best interests and the child's right to grow up in a family primary. Karen Bose and Professor Charles Nelson are both associated with Children's Hospital Boston, Harvard Medical School, and the Harvard School of Public Health. Charles Nelson is the professor of pediatrics and neuroscience at the Harvard Medical School. He is very regretful that he's unable to be here today, but we're very lucky to have his colleague, Karen Bose, and she will present for them on the medical and other science demonstrating the relationship between nurturing family care and normal infant development, and on the destructive impact of institutional care. I will then conclude with a description of the particular human rights violations suffered by unparented children in Guatemala, Honduras, and Peru, and with our request for remedies. Paola?
Senhores comissários, é uma honra comparecer diante da comissão hoje. Eu agradeço muito a oportunidade de poder tratar da questão dos direitos humanos das crianças sem família. I'm going to speak in English from now, with your permission. I would like to refer you to the written testimony where the legal argument is developed in more detail, and what I would like to do in the few minutes that I will use to speak, to refer to some specific questions and legal issues that arise from the body of human rights law that this commission has helped to develop over the years. The Inter-American System of Human Rights is a global leader in the rights of the child. I don't think there is any other international body whose work has been so fundamental, so cutting edge, in relation to the rights of the child as the work that has been developed by the commission and by the court. This body of human rights law that has been evolving in the Inter-American system sees children not only as object of protection, but primarily as full-fledged, independent subjects of human rights. The distinction may seem nuanced, but is of extraordinary significance. So as we come here today, we are very hopeful that the voiceless minority of the unparented children will have their perspective heard and taken into account by this commission. As you know well, the American Declaration of Rights and Duties of Man has acknowledged, in Article 6, the right to a family. Has also acknowledged, in Article 7, the right of children to special protection. But the special protection there is not only as an object of protection only or primarily. Article 18 affirmed that every person has the status of an independent, full-fledged subject of human rights. The American Convention on Human Rights has deepened the commitment of the peoples of the Americas to the idea of human rights. Under the convention, physical, mental, and moral integrity is a human right, Article 5. Article 17 affirmed the centrality of the family in human experience. Article 19 has established the right of children to positive measures necessary to secure the enjoyment of fundamental human rights. The Inter-American Court has and this commission have interpreted Article 19 positive measures to include a special protection for children deprived of family membership in order for their survival and healthy development to be guaranteed. As you will hear in a moment, social, medical, and developmental sciences show how destructive deprivation of nurturing family is. They show also how destructive institutionalization of children is for their mental, physical, and moral development. What the science shows is that there is no proxy. There is no institutional proxy. There is no institutional substitute for a nurturing family. So what is the predicament? What is the condition of children living in those institutions? I think it is safe to affirm, on the basis of what we know, that no other single known genetic factor in times of peace is more mentally and physically disabling and more morally degrading than institutionalization. Please allow me to repeat that. No other single known genetic factor in times of peace is more mentally and physically disabling and more degrading morally than institutionalization. There is, in fact, an orphanage to asylum pipeline when it comes to institutionalization of children. That is, from orphanage and similar institutions to hospitals, hospices, and prisons. There is a pipeline from institution to institution. If you are institutionalized early in life, the chances that you're going to remain institutionalized later in life are dramatic. So the predicament of children who are placed in institutions is one of crushing vulnerability and dependence upon the states in which they live. I think it is also fair to say that familyless children are the most insular, vulnerable, and voiceless minority of any nation. So what to do? The rights and principles that I mentioned at the beginning of my presentation are not merely aspirational. In fact, this commission and the court have brought them to life in landmark reports and opinions. We come to you today to ask the commission to further this work in relation to familyless children. We ask you to affirm that children without families are full-fledged subjects of human rights, that their rights are not derivative of the rights of the adults in their lives or the sovereign rights of the states in which they live. We ask you to acknowledge that the right of these children to a family is a fundamental human right. And we ask you to consider that the right to a family is also a precondition for the concrete enjoyment of other rights. The Commission, the Court have acknowledged that unless one is able to develop a plan of life, a life's project, that unless one has the survival, mental and physical health and moral integrity preserved, further enjoyment of human rights is made impossible when not very, very, very difficult. So a right to a family is not only fundamental in itself, it is also a precondition for the full enjoyment of the other human rights acknowledged by the Convention. The science shows us, as I mentioned initially, that there is no proxy for growing up in a family. So we urge you, the Commission, to declare that placement in nurturing families is a fundamental right of the child and is the primary instrument by which the human rights of the child can be fully addressed and secured. Now, in relation to this child, to this right, the fundamental human rights to grow in a family, states commit omissive and commissive violations. They proactively violate the human rights of the child when they create obstacles for familyless children to be placed in adoptive families. They omissively violate the human rights of the child when they fail to implement policies that aggressively promote adoption as a mechanism for securing the human rights of the child. So as we come to you today, we ask you to give voice to these children and to prevent their objectification and commodification as beings whose life shines only in relation to the adults in their lives or to the countries in which they live. And we ask you to extend to familyless children in the Americas the human right to grow up in a family and to have the preconditions for the enjoyment of all the other human rights that the persons in the Americas have secured by the Convention. Thank you.
Okay, so my name is Karen Boss, and I'm here to talk about the science behind institutional care. It's been known for a long time, over 50 years, that children raised in institutions are at great risk for serious... is this working? Sorry. Turn off the lights. Yes, that would be great. Thank you. Okay. It's been known for over 50 years that children raised in institutions are at great risk for serious mental and physical health problems. And we now have proof, based on controlled social science experiments, that these developmental problems are directly caused by institutional care. We also now have scientific evidence of the damage to brain development produced by institutional care, which in turn results in long-term developmental problems. Today, I will discuss the current scientific evidence for how institutional care is harmful for brain development. So why is it that institutional care is bad for brain development? Let me begin by describing what characterizes life in an institution. Children raised in an institution experience severe isolation, regimentation, and have little access to caregivers. Older children often suffer physical and sexual abuse as well. Now, we know that experience plays a powerful role in shaping brain development after birth. Normal brain development depends on experiences that should be common to all children. These experiences include sensory stimulation, access to a caregiver who is responsive to and consistently cares for the child, adequate nutrition, and an environment that is low in so-called toxic stress. Many children living in institutions lack some or all of these elemental requirements for development. Why specifically are such conditions so bad for the brain? One reason is that inadequate input leads to underdevelopment of some brain circuits and the miswiring of others. Accordingly, such children experience a range of problems due to errors in brain development. Early experience often exerts an especially strong influence in terms of later brain development. This influential period of time is referred to as a sensitive period. The first 3 years of life are most critical in terms of laying a strong foundation for brain development. Indeed, in some aspects of brain functioning, stimulation must occur during a certain stage of development or the brain will never develop normally. Thus, it may be difficult or impossible to recover from the impact of early institutional care, even after removal from this setting. So while any time spent in institutional care is destructive, time spent in early infancy is the most destructive. Children who spend their first 2 years of life in an institution are at high risk of serious disabilities in later life. And of course, the longer children spend in institutions, the worse off they will be. Next, I want to talk about some of the specific deficits that children raised in institutions experience. Children raised in institutions are known to experience a range of problems, including impairments in physical, cognitive, language, and social-emotional functioning. Specifically, these children often show growth stunting, impaired intellectual development, language delays, attachment problems, depression and anxiety, aggressive behavior problems, and inattention and hyperactivity. As one example, to illustrate the impact of institutional care on physical growth, one estimate is that institutionalized children fall behind 1 month of growth for every 2.6 months in a Romanian orphanage, 3 months in a Chinese orphanage, and 3.4 months in a Russian orphanage. By these calculations, a 10-year-old child who has lived in a Romanian institution his whole life would be expected to be the height of an average 6-year-old. Here are some pictures of children raised in institutions in Romania that demonstrate this growth stunting. As you can see, the child on the far left is actually an 11-year-old girl. The child in the middle is a 14-year-old girl, and the child on the right is a 17-year-old girl. Cognitive development provides another striking example of the negative outcomes of institutional care, as well as the positive outcomes of removing children from such care to nurturing family-like care. A study that I am involved in Romania has found that children raised in institutions have an average IQ in the range of borderline mental retardation. When these children are removed from institutional care and placed into very high-quality foster care, cognitive function improves, although it is still lower than children of similar demographics who were raised in their families from birth. You can see on this slide the cognitive function. The red bar represents children who have continued institutional care. The yellow bar is children who were moved from an institution to a high-quality foster care setting. And the green bar is children who were family-raised who were never institutionalized. This improvement is the greatest for the children who are youngest when removed from an institution, especially if the child is younger than 2 years. Recent research has allowed us to see some of the specific damage to the brain that institutional care causes. For example, neuroimaging studies such as MRIs and EEGs have shown that institutionalized children have lower levels of brain activity in different important regions and a reduction in the connections between brain areas that are essential to normal brain functioning. In summary, institutional care has long been known to lead to impairments in physical, cognitive, language, and social-emotional development. Recent science has confirmed in fairly dramatic ways that the origin of these deficits is in compromised brain development, and further underscore the need for family placement from early infancy on, rather than institutional care, to give abandoned children an opportunity for normal development. Thank you.
I'm now going to focus on some of the specifics with respect to Guatemala, Honduras, and Peru, and on our request for remedies. So in these three countries, as in many poor countries, extreme poverty, civil unrest, war, and widespread illness have resulted in huge numbers of children being orphaned, abandoned, or surrendered by their parents. Almost all of these children are relegated to institutional care or to life on the streets. Now, in the past, international adoption functioned to place many thousands of children per year from these three countries in permanent nurturing homes. Many of these were adopted as young infants, giving them a good chance for normal development. But international adoption has now been largely shut down in these countries. So, for example, the total number of children placed in the United States from these countries has been reduced to less than 1% of the number placed in the peak placement years from these three countries, less than 1%. Even those relatively few children now adopted out of these three countries are typically placed in adoption only after lengthy, damaging stays in institutional care. Now, no good alternative to international adoption has developed in these countries. Very few domestic adoptive homes exist, nowhere near enough for the children in need. And almost no domestic adoptive homes exist for older children or for children with disabilities who could with relative ease be placed internationally. The many thousands of children per year who could have been placed in adoptive families abroad are now almost certainly languishing in institutions or on the streets. Growing numbers of children are now crowding existing institutions, and new institutions are being built as we speak. Many of the children in these institutions are orphaned or have been abandoned. While many others have identifiable biological parents, very few of these children will ever be sent home to live with those parents. And yet, no adequate system exists to identify children who should be freed for adoption. Conditions in these institutions in these three countries, of course, vary, but social, medical, and developmental science over the last many decades demonstrates that even so-called good institutions are destructive for infants and children. The institutions in poor countries like Guatemala, Honduras, and Peru are generally extremely limited in staff and other resources. Children who spend any significant number of months in such institutions are at extreme risk for future mental, physical, and emotional problems. So accordingly, quick summary of one piece of this picture. These three countries have large numbers of children in desperate need of homes and families. While outside of these countries, there are large numbers of prospective parents eager to provide those homes at no cost to Guatemala, Honduras, and Peru. And yet these three countries have said no to this option, locking the children into institutions rather than permitting them to be placed in adoptive families abroad. Now, we recognize that adoption abuses such as kidnapping and baby buying occur, and we condemn those practices. But we urge the Commission to reject the policy responses promoted by many, including the United States, policy responses that these three countries have adopted, policy responses that effectively shut down international adoption. Specifically, we urge the Commission to reject moratoria on international adoption, such as has existed in the last year or so in Guatemala. We urge the Commission to reject in-country placement preferences, which delay and deny adoptive homes. And we urge the Commission to reject prohibitions on the private intermediaries that often function and that typically function in Central and South America as the lifeblood of such adoption. These restrictive adoption policies simply punish unparented children by denying them adoptive homes. We urge you to instead embrace as policy responses those which would punish the people who violate the laws against kidnapping and baby buying by enforcing and strengthening those laws. Our request for remedies. We ask for three kinds of remedy. First, we ask that the commission issue a decision recognizing the human rights principles outlined in our written testimony. We've outlined specific requests for rulings with respect to 9 human rights principles laid out at pages 7 to 8 of the written testimony that I've handed up to all the commissioners. We rely on that written testimony for the specifics. I won't go through the 9 here. But in sum, those 9 specific principles represent 3 general principles. First, that you require that the child's best interest be truly primary. Now, in many ways, this is just a cliche, because of course everyone in the world says, and all the human rights documents in the world say, that the child's best interest shall be primary. What we're asking you to do is to put specifics and teeth to that principle by adopting concrete, specific principles that we've urged upon you that would give meaning to that principle, that the child's best interest should be primary. Our second general principle is that you require that states take affirmative action to place children in nurturing family care as early in life as possible. Our third general principle is that you prohibit any in-country preferences and any other restrictions on international adoption that delay or deny family placement. That's our first request for remedy, an opinion that would endorse those principles. Our second is that the rapporteur on the rights of the child conduct a special investigation of the situation of unparented children and related international adoption policies in these 3 countries. Such an investigation would be in itself a hugely significant step, bringing desperately needed light to the issues and proof of important facts that are now endlessly disputed. Third, we request that the rapporteurs for each country in the Americas include the issues that we raise here in their regular inquiries into the various countries and related reports. While the egregious violations of children's rights in Guatemala, Honduras, and Peru warrant the targeted investigation we call for, these problems constitute part of a larger pattern sadly typical of many other countries. The United States is part of this pattern, having played an important role recently in shutting down international adoption in Guatemala and having recently imposed its own 3-month waiting period before U.S. children can be placed abroad. We thank you for having this hearing, for your time, and we look forward to your questions.
Muchas gracias por las presentaciones. Le voy a ofrecer la palabra primero al comisionado Pablo Osorio Piñeiro, quien es relator de la Comisión para Derechos de la Niñez.
As I just have some minutes also, because we don't have too much time, the first thing that I'd like to say that I have the utmost respect for the knowledge and the expertise that Professors Bartolet and Professor Barroso and their colleagues have on this subject of about the institutionalization of children and the question of international adoption. And I have received your text, and I assure you that I read them with a great attention and interest. I will try to in just a few minutes to have some comments about your presentation. Vou continuar em espanhol. Não, eu creio que aqui há duas questões decisivas. Uma é a questão das instituições. Isso estamos em total acordo. Conozco os 3 países. As conclusões e as recomendações de meu informe mundial sobre violência contra a niñez, hecho con la secretaria general y con la comisión de direito, Comissão Interamericana de Direitos Humanos coincidem totalmente com a visão que foi demonstrada aqui. Não necessito ser convencido sobre a questão da institucionalização. A situação não só em las Américas, é um desastre em todos os outros continentes, em Ásia, África, em Europa Oriental, onde vocês têm vários comentários. Também estamos em pleno acordo sobre o que o professor Barroso mencionava sobre o niño, não como um mini cidadão, mas como um cidadão com plenos direitos. E creio que isso em las Américas está uma das fundamentos de la incapacidade de los estados asegurarem, garantizarem los direitos de los niños. Por quê? Porque los niños não são considerados como ciudadanos. Então, em todo isso, e toda a apresentação de mi colega brasileiro, estou de pleno acordo e me encanta que vocês tenham afirmado isso com grande ênfase. A outra questão é a questão de la adoção internacional. Talvez meus comentários sejam um pouco marcados por minha experiência em um país que não devo me pronunciar aqui, mas quando estava no governo de Brasil, era a autoridade de adoção internacional. E isso, para mim, era uma pesadilha enorme, porque a situação era absolutamente desastrosa. Não tão desastrosa como em esses três países, que, especialmente os países da América Central, mas também os problemas eram muito grandes. E justamente foram esses problemas em todo o continente que provocaram que UNICEF, uma agência muito com quem trabalho há muitos anos, puseram em evidência os abusos nesses países sobre a adoção internacional, e houve um movimento de transformação da legislação segundo as recomendações de esses organismos que a professora Bartoli me mencionou. Minha posição, que pode ser modificada, é que a solução não é a solução para esse desastre, por la incompetência dos governos, não é necessariamente a adoção internacional. Eu creio que é um tema que tem sido trabalhado por vocês e que a minha expertise não é tão limitada. Mas eu creio que há vários problemas que devem ser antes da adoção internacional, que continuam a dever ser de interesse da Comissão. A separação do niño de sua família, o direito de toda pessoa a receber proteção contra ingerências arbitrárias ou ilegais em sua família, o dever do Estado ser garante dos direitos do niño, fortalecer a capacidade da família e a comunidade. A normativa internacional dos direitos humanos, como vocês bem conhecem, se refere à necessidade de, quando se decidir separar um niño de seu núcleo familiar, isso deve ser debidamente justificado. O niño deve permanecer com sua família biológica, salvo quando seja contrário a seu interesse superior. Então, posso garantir-lhes que vou meditar com grande interesse em toda a fundamentação sobre a adoção internacional. Mas queria fazer algumas perguntas e depois vou dar uma notícia positiva ao fim de tudo isso, atendendo a um dos questionamentos, de um dos petitórios. E eu creio que temos que conhecer um pouco mais a situação nesses três países com referência à proteção da família e do niño. qual é o procedimento para separar o niño de seu núcleo familiar? Se buscam alternativas temporárias, se existem programas de revinculação à família de los niños institucionalizados. Eu creio que esses aspectos complementariam a argumentação por la adopção internacional, porque, por supuesto, ustedes bien saben que no hay un derecho de los padres sin hijos biológicos de adoptar. Eso no es un derecho humano. No está en la normativa internacional. Ainda que nosotros comprendamos el drama, la tragedia de los padres y madres que quieren tener hijos. Ahora la buena noticia. Estamos terminando justamente un informe sobre justicia juvenil, con gran énfasis en el desastre de la institucionalización en las instituciones del Estado, como los niños en conflicto con los niños, niñas y adolescentes en conflicto con la ley. Estaré proponiendo a mis colegas y al secretariado a realizar un otro informe sobre la cuestión de la situación de niños, niñas y adolescentes en las instituciones. Care institutions, no solamente state institutions, pero orphanages, psychiatric institutions, instituciones de la sociedad civil, no del Estado. Y en ese aspecto voy a proponer también que en la misma relación que ustedes hacen de discutir la cuestión de la adopción y de la adopción internacional. Entonces mi reacción no es una negativa que no vamos a considerar y por supuesto estaremos en contacto con ustedes en la definición del Conseil Paper de ese informe. Muchas gracias.
Comisionado Meléndez.
Gracias. Quiero agradecerles por la información y el enfoque muy serio, muy profesional que han hecho de este tema de la adopción, de la problemática de los derechos fundamentales de la niñez y del el serio impacto y los riesgos de la institucionalización en nuestros países, ¿no? Especialmente los tres países a los que se han referido, estos riesgos, las tuberías y las conexiones con la cárcel, con los hospitales, con los psiquiátricos, etcétera, ¿no? Yo quisiera preguntarles en el marco de las adopciones internacionales si ustedes han hecho alguna investigación sobre el seguimiento que las autoridades consulares de los países de adopción, de los países que aprueban las adopciones, están realizando en los países receptores. Y si también han investigado mecanismos de control de los países receptores, de los gobiernos de los países receptores en las adopciones internacionales. Especialmente para evitar el comercio, la trata, la venta de órganos, la explotación laboral, la explotación sexual, los abusos sexuales, el maltrato infantil. Porque yo soy de Centroamérica, soy de El Salvador, y estoy informado, como ustedes, de las adopciones masivas de países centroamericanos, por ejemplo, de Guatemala, Honduras y de El Salvador en alguna medida, y de los riesgos, pero también del descuido de nuestros gobiernos, de los gobiernos de la región, en darle seguimiento precisamente al destino de los niños, para garantizar por la vía consular o por otra vía que se respeten esos derechos fundamentales y que el interés superior del niño sea preservado durante todo el proceso de adopción, tanto en el país de origen como en el país receptor. Quisiera saber, pues, precisamente si hay alguna investigación sobre esto y si ustedes creen que es importante que los gobiernos establezcan estas políticas y estos mecanismos de control y seguimiento para garantizar el interés superior de la niñez hasta el final del proceso de adopción, mientras se conserva la calidad de menores de edad, de niños o niñas.
Sí, muy brevemente, en aras del tiempo, pero yo creo que sería importante contar con información empírica para la Comisión. Por ejemplo, un punto es cuántos niños hay en orfanatos en estos países y si tienen en los otros países de América, incluyendo Estados Unidos, también sería muy útil. Porque, claro, estamos hablando aquí de un tema como es la salvaguarda de los derechos de los niños y niñas, que es de primer orden, un deber de primer orden para los estados. Entonces no es una cuestión que los estados simplemente puedan decir este asunto lo tendrán que solucionar los particulares. Me parece entonces que es relevante considerar eso, porque también tiene que ver con cuánto serían las tareas que le llevarían a los estados mejorar sustantivamente la situación en esos lugares. Lo mismo también tener cifras acerca de los abusos en los propios orfanatos y en los procedimientos de adopción. Les voy a dar la palabra entonces ahora. Lo que no alcancen a explicarlo pueden hacer llegar también información adicional a la comisión. Tendríamos 5 o 7 minutos más o menos.
I will start. In response to Commissioner Pinheiro's questions, I'll start. We completely agree that the priority ought to be on keeping as many children as possible with their parents, returning children to their parents if the parents can be enabled to raise the children. So I think we're in complete agreement there. However, I'm troubled at any idea that that's what, you know, this commission should recommend, and I realize you went on to suggest other things. I think that what's important to recognize is that for decades and decades, people have said and will continue to say we should solve poverty. And it's a large challenge. What we can do today and tomorrow for existing children who need homes, who will never in their lifetime go home to live with their parents, is give them families. That's what international adoption offers. That's why we urge you to consider that. All we're saying is it should be an option on the table. UNICEF and others want to take it off the table. That seems to us to do clearly is a destructive for existing children, and in our view does nothing to help solve the larger problem. So we think these things can be worked on simultaneously without sacrificing existing children who could get homes tomorrow, and if they don't, will live out their lives institutionalized. Secondly, in terms of the corruption issues, there are bad things that go on by some people who are involved with adoption. We think the numbers of those things overall are exaggerated. But my plea to you is to weigh the evils. So on the one hand, we have some amount of money going to birth mothers, most of whom are desperately poor and need it. I think we should have laws against money going to birth mothers. I believe most of those birth mothers would be surrendering their children anyway because they can't afford to raise these children. On the other hand, we have thousands of children whose lives are being destroyed because they're being raised in orphanages. We're saying weigh those evils and don't, in order to stop some of the corruption and some of the money going to birth mothers, shut down the opportunity for kids to get homes. We think that causes way more in the way of evil than the evils that go on in the context of adoption abuses. We also think there's another solution. Why does the world leap to the solution that punishes children instead of doing the hard work that is required to send the people who are kidnapping and buying babies to prison? Several of you have mentioned the sort of things that we could find out and whether some help could be given to the countries. And we're as eager as we can be to work with the Commission and also to work, if we're given the opportunity, with these countries to help come up with practical solutions to law reform that could both help in the larger problem of family preservation, family reunification, and also help think about how to structure laws that could penalize the lawbreakers but not the children. I was very pleased that I think the good news you announced was that you would be investigating not just with respect to teenagers, but also with respect to the infants, and also with respect to international adoption. I mean, one of the questions that reasons I think we so desperately need an investigation is that many have claimed that if we just shut down international adoption, then we'll do good things. We'll reunify kids with their parents, we'll create model welfare support, we'll do better things for the larger group of children. We don't believe that. We actually believe that international adoption opens doors, raises consciousness, creates more domestic adoption within the country. So we beg you to look at what are the implications, what happens, good or bad, when international adoption is shut down. In terms of the questions from Commissioner Melendez about follow-up, I believe you're asking, you know, should we be concerned about what happens to these children when they are adopted? And I actually, for the last 25 years, when I've been focused almost entirely on child welfare and adoption work, almost everything I read is social science, empirical science. I'm much more interested in the facts than in people's reasoning about policies. I want policies based on facts. So I've read every social science study I've could get my hands on in terms of the what happens to kids when they are adopted, both domestically in the U.S., internationally, transracially. And I think overwhelmingly this is incredibly positive story told by this research. If children are adopted at or near birth, whether domestically, transracially, internationally, they do essentially as well as any child raised in a normal, happy, biological family. There is extraordinarily little evidence of abuse once children are adopted. The rates of abuse in the United States for all adoptions are lower in adoptive families than they are in the normal world of biologically linked parenting. They're very, very low. So, and there's, you know, lots of follow-up studies. So would it be a good thing for sending countries to institute a demand that they get follow-up studies? Frankly, I think it's a waste of resources. It's a waste of energy. We should be spending our energy looking for the kids who need homes and freeing them up. Does that mean zero in time? Okay. And freeing them. Okay. It doesn't have a number on it. We should be spending our time on other things, because honestly, I don't think these kids are at risk. But if it would help sending countries feel better and recognize that, no, their kids are not being murdered for their organs, their kids are being treated overall unbelievably well, then I'm all for those kinds of follow-up requirements, because the news will be good. And in terms of the questions that you and some others asked about, could we provide you with information? Absolutely. We would be delighted to follow up by providing you with some of the kinds of information you have asked for here. We can give you information on numbers of children in group homes and institutions in the United States. There is information with respect to kids in these three countries we cannot give you. That's why we're begging for this kind of investigation in terms of numbers of kids in institutions in these countries. I'll stop and hope that there might be a minute for my colleagues.
I'll make it brief. I think that if this commission and if the Inter-American system cannot change the frame from which we understand the right of the child, no other global body can. So we fully acknowledge that international adoption is not a solution for all children without family, but it's part of a solution. If we accept the thesis that there is a human right of the child to grow up in a family, then the question is not anymore how to make sure that no abuse takes place, but how to increase the chance that children will grow up in nurturing families. We all know that the internal dynamics of families, families constituted by adoption, or families constituted by birth, is such that the power relationship between parents and children lead to abuse, to neglect. The stories around the world are very compelling, but we don't stop people from having children. We realize that parents kill, abuse, neglect children, but we don't ask that families are not allowed to have children anymore. There is no right to adopt, but there is a human right to grow up in a family. From the perspective of the adult, there is no human right to adopt a child, but from the perspective of the human rights of the child, there is a human right to grow up in a family. And
I have to conclude, if you can put a few more words on
in 5 seconds. So what I asked the commission, what we asked the commission to do, it may seem a little nuanced, but it's again very significant, is not to look at the right of the child from the perspective of the adults in their lives, but to look to the rights of the children from their own perspective. What, seeing that from the perspective of full-fledged, independent, self-standing subject of human rights, change, how looking from that perspective change the issues and the concerns that we all and we too share about what happens to children once they are placed in families. But I think there is a significant distinction, and the consequences are many when you approach this from the perspective of the rights of the adults or the abuse of the adults in their lives, and the perspective of the human right of the child. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your presentations. And as we said before, you can send us the information in written, which will be welcomed by the Commission.
Thank you.
Thanks.